fleeting glimpses of things seen through a veil, darkly. Do we understand the meaning of these visions of life? Why we are here and how little of our existence we truly understand? Tonight we will talk of these things on The Other Side. Welcome to The Other Side. I am Jim Harold, so glad to be with you once again. And today we're going to talk about a subject that has interested me greatly. It's something that, frankly, personally, I have some ambivalence about. When I look at my religious tradition and what I grew up with, it may not be necessarily compatible, but I keep hearing and reading about all of these stories where people have strange recollections and strange memories of things that happened to them, but as a different person. So I've long been fascinated with this topic. That's why when I saw this book, I said, I've got to do a show on that. Our guest today is Frank Maris. He is the author of My Journey Down the Reincarnation Highway, the true story of a man who found 9 of his past lives. Frank is a businessman, and he lives in the Columbus, Ohio area, a little bit down south from where I'm at in the Cleveland area. And we're so glad to have him with us today. Frank, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Jim.
So I have to ask, when I think of a businessman, I think of someone who's kind of buttoned down just the facts. That's kind of my perception. How did you get into something like reincarnation?
Well, you know, some of your perceptions are absolutely right. I mean, I went to Cleveland State University with a degree in accounting and a master's in finance and a career in banking and investments. So absolutely, you know, talking about reincarnation back then would be absolutely the last thing in my mind. And add to that that I was an atheist at the time. I'd be the last person in the world to believe in reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
But something has to smack you in the face and grab you. And if that happens, then you change your viewpoint dramatically. And that's what happened to me.
So how did you stumble on this? How did you have this epiphany?
Well, it's a lifetime thing. And a lot of people see this in their life. And it all starts with obsession. And ever since I was a young boy, I was always interested in World War II. Don't ask me why. I had no relatives who were in World War II. My dad was not a soldier. I was not a soldier. There was nothing to draw me to that. But I read and read and watched TV stories and it was all about World War II. And back then, I don't know how old you are, Jim, but I'm in my now late 50s, and back then, the 60s, there was all kinds of black and white World War II shows on TV.
Yeah.
And I always root for the Germans. Don't ask me why. My background's Italian. You know, a little bit Czechoslovakian. Not German, but I'd root for the Germans and read books. And then all through my life, I kept reading World War II books. And then over time, as I got in my 40s, I started concentrating on the Russian front. And that's all I'd read about. Once again, very strange. And then I became successful in business and I had enough money to buy some toys. Well, I start buying these old German guns from World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, I don't know why. And I eventually accumulated a $20,000 collection. And I'm surprised I'm still alive today, you know, with my wife. She should have killed me. At one point in time, I stopped. I had this wall full of German guns, and they had to come from the Eastern Front. And I stopped, and I said, what am I doing? I'm a patriotic American. I'm not German. I'm not a soldier. Why do I have this shrine to the German soldiers of the Eastern Front? It's
right.
The weirdest thing. So it started with that, and then about the same time when I just completed this gun collection, my dad died, who I was very close to. And, you know, when your dad dies and you're getting older in middle age, that's the time you start looking at your own mortality.
Sure.
And then I said, well, you know, maybe there's more to this. You know, it doesn't make sense that you work all of your life. You start at nothing, you know nothing, and you build this life of wisdom and then die. And all that knowledge and all that experience gets flushed away. It didn't make sense to me because, you know, nature recycles, but this knowledge is not being recycled. So I decided to give it one more try, you know, as an atheist, to see if there's something else on the other side. So I started to look and read and study, and I become more aware of reincarnation books, stories. Yeah, I didn't believe in it, but it was in the back of my mind. But one thing, kind of like what you said, you got to believe, or not believe, but you got to see it. And so I said, well, you know, to prove that there is an afterlife, there's only one thing that would prove it to me, is that if I can go out of body, that means your consciousness can leave your body, and that means when you die, your consciousness can leave. And so that's what I decided to pursue. And coincidence led me to a series of books which showed me that you have to meditate to get into that kind of state. And I never believed that I can do that. But I said, hey, I got nothing to lose. Let's give it a try. So I started to meditate. And within 2 weeks, I had this very, very strange experience. I meditated, and then I went to sleep. And then it was 3 o'clock in the morning. I had this dream. It's a really vivid dream. I'm in my bathtub. I got a big bathtub. And I was reading a book in a bathtub. And the book was about a child dying. And at the time, I said, well, that's okay. And then in the book, the parents were upset about the child's death. And I said, well, and I thought to myself, well, that's okay. The parents will see the child in heaven. And I stop and go, well, that's pretty weird for an atheist to say.
Just that's true.
Then in the dream, I felt something grab me underneath the armpits and stand me up or sit me up. And I go, what the heck is that? Next thing I know, I'm standing up in the bathtub, and then I'm thrown right through the ceiling. And I go through it like a hot knife through butter. And as I'm going through the ceiling and through my attic, I actually see the joists in my attic. And I pop through the roof, and I'm 150 feet over my bedroom.
Mm.
And I'm going, and I look up, and the stars, Jim, are absolutely brilliant. Never seen a star so brilliant like this. And then I had the oh crap moment when I go, I'm 150 feet over my bedroom, my roof.
It's kind of the Wile E. Coyote moment.
Exactly. That's exactly what it was. And I fall back into my bed, and I wake up, and I look, and my clock radio says 3:07, and my body's cold. And I read someplace that when the soul or consciousness leaves your body, that your body gets cold. I'm freezing. I never freeze it at night. And I go, what the hell was that? And so later, I talked to some people, and they go, hey, yeah, you had an out-of-body experience. And so I go, wow. But I wasn't quite convinced yet, but I continued to meditate. But then the convincing thing came about a month later. And when I meditate, my head kind of rolls around, and it's real crazy. But I just love to do its thing. It's like I'm possessed. And then one morning in my office, I'm meditating, and also my head starts doing the head roll type thing. Then it starts shaking its head like yes, the up and down motion.
Mm-hmm.
And then it starts shaking its head no. And then back to yes again. And I'm going, are you signaling yes and no? And my head says yes. I don't know who the heck I'm talking to. I said, can I ask you questions? My head shakes yes. Well, what's the question I'm going to ask? What's the very first question I'm going to ask with this obsession of World War II and the Germans and that kind of thing? And I go, was I a German soldier in World War II? And my head says, yes. And I go, oh, my God. I said, when did I die? Well, I'm not getting any information other than yes and no, so I have to go through this long process of spelling out, I said, did I die in 1941? No. Did I buy in 42? No. 43? No. 44? Yes. So I work out the system. I died May 1st, 1944. Okay, what was my name? I said, well, okay, we'll start with the first letter, first name. A, no. B, no. And when I work it out, and finally O appears or says yes. Then it's through this laborious system. It's spelled out Otto Kosterman. I said, oh, my God. I said, what? And so I'm practically an expert on the Eastern Front. I go, well, was I killed on the Southern Front? No. Central? No. Northern? Yes. I go, okay, what was my regiment? 23rd. What was my division? 11th. What was my hometown? Mandolin. So kind of snap out of it, and I go and do some research. Well, it turns out that the 11th Division did serve in the Northern Front, and the 23rd Regiment was part of the 11th Division, and Mandolin was a part of Prussia that recruited into the 23rd Regiment. It all fits. I was blown away.
Mm. Wow. That now, were you able to track it down to the actual name?
No. A lot of the records were wiped out in World War II, especially in Prussia. So I did do a search. I did do a grave search. So I couldn't confirm that name. But in other lives, I was able to find two of my names in history.
Oh, that's amazing.
Now, yeah, it's just staggering.
Now, something that the skeptics say, and we know that the skeptics out there sometimes will just try to come throw up things to shoot holes into a case. But a lot of times people will say, well, when I hear of these various cases, it's always someone had been royalty, or they had been a hero of some type, or they something more glamorous or exciting. But rarely do we hear stories of somebody that says, you know, I was a ditch digger in Ireland or something like that. Now, did you find that to be a case when you look back at your various lives that it kind of varies different socioeconomic status? Or, I mean, I guess, how would you answer that, and how did that reflect in your experience?
That's an excellent question. Now, what I learned later on in my journey is that you choose the lives that you want to lead. And you're doing that to learn lessons that you want to learn. So if being a ditch digger helps you in that process, then you become a ditch digger. I, though, was what's what they called the leadership track. And I got this information from Stacy Wells, who's a national psychic who specializes in pre-birth planning. So most of my lives were on the in leadership. However, you know, and I've heard that before. Oh, yeah, they say that you're Cleopatra or,
right,
or
exactly.
Caesar or something
that's,
like
that's
that.
A,
exactly.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
Well, I could tell you that even though I was a leader, there's nothing glamorous about what I was, because as an archbishop, I was a pedophile. And that's nothing to brag about in the 1200s.
Right.
And also, I was a terrible guy. I mean, I was a very powerful guy, but a very terrible guy who history says that I was angry and violent. So angry, violent, pedophile. So nothing there to brag about, you have to agree,
no,
right?
No, not at all.
And then another major life, and this is the life that really got me into trouble. I was a nobleman, a count, a baron and a count in the 1600s in Germany. And I was a cavalry colonel at the time in the 30 Years' War. I stole so much money that I bought my own castle. And then later in life, I actually was a high advisor to the Holy Roman Emperor. So that sounds all cool. But I found out, too, that I was a serial killer. I killed 7 innocent people.
Wow, you were a bad guy.
I was a bad guy, right. And so for those people who say, oh, well, you know, it's all glory, I mean, yeah, I don't think so.
Now, this is interesting. Now, you said you stole a lot of money, for example, in this one past life. Now,
yeah.
Does that, in further incarnations, is there kind of a karma that kicks in where, you know, something important is stolen from you? Is that the way it works?
Great question. Actually, not. In that life, actually, in the history books, I was known as Nicholas the Thief. And actually, my castle that I bought is still in Czechoslovakia, and it's a tourist attraction. And I've got a picture of the trophy room, and I see my portrait. I'm looking at it right now. My portrait. I was a big guy back then, about 6'2", big guy, the founder of this noble family. And so, I actually wanted to go visit there last year on a vacation. So this stuff's still there. But as far as karma, I was a robber. I was a rapist. Didn't get in trouble for that. I was an absolute monster on the battlefield, you know, slaying guys, you know, my sword and my pistol. Didn't get in trouble for that. You get in trouble if you kill somebody who's not supposed to go yet. If you didn't have an agreement that you're supposed to kill that person,
mm-hmm.
Then I've wasted that person's life. I wasted their time to learn a lesson. Now they have to go back to another life and learn that very same lesson. So that's what I got in trouble for, because the whole thing of my journey is that I discovered reincarnation. I was really happy about that. Oh, my God, we're immortal. You know, nobody loses their lives. You know, we live forever. But then I keep finding that I died violently in six lives, and it turned into the Groundhog Day, where I just die violently. And I go, well, this is no great kiss from God. I mean, this is terrible. Right. I want to live the bloody Groundhog Day.
Right.
But I found out why it was me, why I kept doing it. It was the karma. I killed seven innocent people. I owed seven lives, and that's why I kept dying. And I still owe one.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So,
I won't be taking any car rides with you or anything there. But now, you mentioned in kind of our pre-show communication that at one point you actually had, in all of your experiences here, you had an argument with a ghost. Now, that sounds pretty fascinating. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. My wife was there. She thought it was funny as heck. there's such a thing called channeling. And by getting this information, through head shakes, I became psychic through meditation. And that's called a clairsentient psychic. And that means I get things through feelings. I'm also a little bit clairvoyant, too. Once in a while, I'll get visions. But I fell in with a group of psychics down here in Columbus. And these psychics down here, or the ones I met, are a lot more powerful than I am. They can see visions. They can hear. And actually went to a psychic class, which was a lot of fun. And in the psychic class, there was this management consultant who channels this Indian chief called Shem. Now, this Indian chief, Shem, used to channel through his mom. His mom died, and so this Shem then transferred to him. And what that means is that the spirit of Shem enters his body, and his consciousness leaves for a little bit, takes a vacation, and Shem takes over his body. He could walk around, he could talk to you, interact with you, and it's the most fascinating thing to see. And so the first time I met Shem was in a group. The psychic class said, okay, we're going to just do this demonstration. And so I was able to ask Shem about the different things I learned in books about heaven and how reincarnation works, and I wanted him to confirm things, which he did. And it was a great session. Well, the second time around, there was another class, I think about 6 months later, Shem was going to reappear. And so Greg, the consultant, then went through the process again, and Shem appeared. And I had more questions for Shem. But for some reason, he was in a cranky mood that day. And he gets on my case. And he starts criticizing my abilities as far as my psychic abilities, as far as, just getting yes and no's. He goes, that's not right. I go, well, that's what's given to me by your side. I mean, I'd love to see and hear psychically, but, that's all I got. And then then I asked him a question that really got him going. I said, my guides, spirit guides, who are supposed to assist you in life, they're told me that I was never a woman. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
And he looks at me and goes, who are you talking to? That's ridiculous, because in reincarnation, you change off, depending what you become. Sometimes you're a woman, sometimes you're a man. He goes, who are you talking to? I said, my spirit guides. He goes, you're not talking to spirit guides. You're talking to low spirits. Now, low spirits are ghosts. They stay on the ethereal plane. They don't go back to heaven and participate in this cycle. And so, but ghosts like to play tricks. And so he's accusing me of associating myself with low spirits, and he's all over my case. I'm getting ticked at this guy. And I go, something? I said, Shem, and Shem is that's what's called a spirit guide, a senior guide or a senior spirit who's done reincarnating. And so he's just here to help us out and not to come back. And I go, I'm not coming back. I'm sick of getting killed down here. He goes, you don't make that choice down here. That's made up on the other side. And here's where the conflict came. I said, well, I used to be a warrior, in past lives. I go, listen, chief, you owe me respect. I counted coup on my enemies. And he goes, what does that count for in this life? And my wife is, I brought my wife that class, and she was laughing like crazy.
Now,
anyway.
The thing is, I guess, how can we use this knowledge? If in fact we do reincarnate and we're on a journey to improve ourselves, how can we use that information on this plane? How can we put that into action for us today to I guess help us learn the lessons we're supposed to learn and have a better and more impactful life and for ourselves and for others?
Another great question. You know, and that was the reason that they really shared with me. I call it the other side, the spirits. They told me about reincarnation, not so much to tell me about reincarnation, but to make me more spiritual, to reach out to them, to communicate with the spirit world, and to help other people. And I think that's what it's all about. And so as far as knowing about reincarnation, the important thing to take away from this is that this is not your only chance here in life. Do your best, you know, love other people, be kind, but don't freak out, you know, that this is the only chance you have to do something. For example, you know, a lot of women maybe have fertility problems and they don't have, you know, they don't have children in this life and they're just beside themselves with grief, which is understandable.
Sure.
Understand that this is only one life of many. You know, supposedly I live 99 lives. And so we're supposed to be down here to each life to look at different aspects. And we have eternity to do this. So I guess what we take away from this is to chill out, do your best, and know that you get another chance. And the whole purpose of this exercise is that as you learn these lessons and go through each of these lives, is that you become a better soul and you get closer and closer to God and you're allowed to go at higher levels of heaven, which is a much better experience than the lower levels of heaven. So there is a system here.
Now, do we have kind of a waiting room that we're in between lives? Is that the way it works?
No, not at all. You go, and this is what I'm studying now. When I talk to spirits, I ask them, oh, where are you? You know, they are on the astral plane, a.k.a. heaven. You know, what do you do? Where do you live? What's it like? And the thing is that when you go back there, you manifest your own reality up there. Just like dreams, you manifest your own dreams. You make up your own dreams. Well, you make up your own environment up there. And so that's where you spend your time, you know, reviewing the past lives, going over your lessons, maybe attending some classes. But it's a good time up there. You know, you're in heaven. And then when you're ready to work further on what you need to work on, for example, in this life, or for many lives, I've been working on self-esteem. Why was I a bad leader as that archbishop and as that count? Because I had poor self-esteem at that time. You know, why? You know, I killed these people because they insulted me. I got pissed. I'm sorry. I got ticked. And that's why I killed them, which is, you know, horrible. But they give me the opportunity to keep working on self-esteem until I no longer care about what other people say about me. So that's my life lesson that I've been working on for several lives. And so when you're ready to come back down and work on some other lessons, then you're reincarnated. You come down here. But it's only like, you know, there's no time in heaven. So coming down here is like a, you know, 5-second break and then you're back up there again. So there's no waiting room. It's you just go back to heaven. And everybody does.
Do you feel that you're generally, now that you've had some time to study at this and deal with it, that you're generally a happier, better person since you have this belief as opposed to maybe when you were an atheist?
Absolutely. You know, as an atheist, you're just looking at the black hole. That you know, what happens after you're gone? You're just dead. Your consciousness is gone. So I know, actually, it's not a belief. When you're a psychic and you have spirits speak to you and they give you visions, you don't believe. You know. I know. And so, absolutely, I'm happier. I know how this whole universe works. Yeah, it's not a mystery. And so, absolutely, I'm happier. And I know what's waiting for me on the side, so I'm really happy.
So if somebody out there, I mean, certainly I would think that one of the things you would suggest is to buy the book. But what other things would you suggest if people have a sense that maybe they've experienced past lives, they want to get in touch with that, understand it, maybe recall them as you have? What are some of the baby steps? How do we get started in taking the journey that you've taken?
The the spiritual journeys go, you know, it's all individual. But if they follow my path, what you first do is you meditate. You make your connection to the universe. And amazing coincidences will happen. I mean, it's in my book, the amazing things that happened to me. And they'll let you know. You will get instructions as far as what you should do and what you need to do. Because when you connect to the universe and you establish that connection, then the guides, the spirit guides, or some people call them guardian angels, will then kind of give you hints as far as what you should do.
Mm-hmm.
And just be open to them and recognize it.
Well, it's a fascinating topic and one that, you know, I hear these stories over and over. I even, you know, sometimes think that maybe I have memories or things that I don't recall. And I thought, well, maybe it's when I was a little kid watching a TV show or something. But then you think, well, maybe it's not. And here's another thing I'll ask real quick, because it occurs to me. You talk about obsessions that seem to pop out of nowhere that don't necessarily make sense. Also, people who have skills at a very young age that almost just seem to know how to do something. Maybe it's playing a piano, maybe it's singing, maybe it's a great athlete who seems to be born with that particular skill. Can you talk about that? Do we carry those things over sometimes from past lives?
I think sometimes you do, but you know, it's in the pre-birth planning. If you want to live a life as a baseball player, then you're going to be given a body and a circumstance where you have that ability and you develop it. Or if you want to be a piano player, you're going to be born with that. So, you know, maybe sometimes you carry it with you, but it's more than likely that that's the life that you planned.
Interesting.
For example, you want to get in radio? Actually, Jim, you chose this life. You chose this life, and you chose your wife.
Very
good. Good or bad? Yeah, absolutely. It's like it's like an improv. They set the stage up for you, and they gave you the abilities, but then you take it from there. And you play it the best you can. And if you goof up, that's okay, because you have plenty more chances. You don't get punished.
Fascinating discussion, Frank. Where can folks pick up on the book and find out more about your journey?
Well, my book's available online at Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble or a number of other ebook distributors. So I'd recommend them going to my website, reincarnationhighway.com. And in that, I've got links to where you can buy my book. But I also have my blog, and which has information about my latest psychic adventures. For example, communicating with my dead mother-in-law, who's having a great time over there, and some others. Or how I visited my tomb in Germany this past summer. So I keep the story going. So once again, reincarnationhighway.com. And appreciate anybody who goes there.
The book is My Journey Down the Reincarnation Highway, the true story of a man who found nine of his past lives. Our guest has been Frank Maris. Frank, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Jim.
And thank you for tuning in to The Other Side. We certainly appreciate it. I hope you'll follow me on Facebook and Twitter. And if you haven't done so, I know you're in the Plus Club, but also sign up for my free newsletter over at jimherald.com and a lot of great information that we put out every week for free. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next time on The Other Side. Bye-bye, everybody.